Coming up on Patriots This Week, opportunity lost.
I had plenty of chances, we just didn't get it done.
A divisional defeat.
Just got to do a better job. I know we're better than that, but we weren't today.
A bittersweet return.
I had it, I brought it in and dropped it.
Now, South Beach comes north.
The Dolphins have as good as anybody.
Good football teams had a couple, tough weeks, which we can certainly relate to.
The next chance to forget the past.
I think it's important not to ride the ups and downs of the season and the emotions of, we won, we lost.
That's right now on Patriots This Week.
Despite the return of one of the most potent pass-catching machines in the National Football League, well, the Patriots got stuck in the mud in the swamps of New Jersey. The push, we know what push it was the end of the game, led to a big Jets win against the Pats. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Patriots This Week. I'm Scott Zolak. Join me each and every week, as usual, former tight end Jermaine Wiggins. What's up, Wiggy?
What up, Zoe?
Love the suit. Looking dapp.
Thank you.
All right, and former linebacker Matt Chatham. What's up, guys?
What's up, Zoe?
All right, we start each and every one of these shows, I think, talking about the quarterback, Tom Brady. Pick six, I thought, really swung the momentum in this game. Start with you, Wiggy. What'd you think of what you're making your quarterback?
At times, he'll make great throws. At times, maybe he's forcing it a little bit. At times, they're not on the same page. So you kind of put that all together, and it's all, like I said, one word. It's just inconsistent.
Yeah, I think one thing that drives completion percentages is the degree of difficulty. And I think Tom finds himself in a lot of times where he's pressing balls to places that are harder to make the completion, quite frankly. So what he's always been so good at is taking the open man. He does it sometimes, and it's not to say he's been playing poorly, but I think your phrase, inconsistent, when you're going to a tougher place to make the completion, expect an incompletion every now and again.
What if there's no open man, though? I mean, what if you have pressure? And I think this is where, you look at the play of quarterback in the National Football League, and I think it all works together. Protection up front, does he have time to throw? Does he have time to look to his second, third guy? And then is there separation? And when there's not separation, like we've talked about this in week one, he's got to be pinpoint perfect like he was at the end of Buffalo. And I think it gets frustrating for him sometimes. But the big thing is, for me, two losses, 2 for 24 combined on third down. That's atrocious. You're not going to win any football games.
As much as who's going to catch it, it's who's going to protect, who's going to be a weapon, and we have to understand that the back is a big part of the protections. What Danny Woodhead did in that role, what Shane Vereen otherwise would have done in that role, what Bolton does from time to time in that role, it's an additional weapon. When you don't feel like you have that, and when the guy is not quite as reliable in the protection, that means you're pressing it. And I think it's one thing to say the guys aren't open, but if you're targeting one guy 17 times and hitting him for less than 50%, I have a feeling you're not looking at the other guys either. You're pinpointed on one guy. So I think there's a number of factors here at play.
And I think his three main third down weapons, when you look at Woodhead, you look at Welker, and we all know the other guy who wore number 81, those three guys were so valuable on third down, especially the guy who wore 81. When you got to that third and five, third and four, and I just feel like they don't have that guy this year. They don't have the guy that can win on those third and medium routes.
Why do Patriots avoid the run in the second half?
Well, Ridley's a really good runner, but they never really stay with him. And then they sprinkle Bolden in there, and then they sprinkle Ridley in there, and it almost seems like this running game isn't going the way it needs to go. And I think when you looked at last year, you had one back, and I think that back was Ridley, and then you sprinkled some other guys in there.
So you think they're outsmarting themselves, like you're trying to be too cute, too much of a chess player.
At times I do think so, because when you start looking at the running back position, that guy needs to get in the rhythm. And it's hard for those guys to get in a rhythm, because it's Ridley this series, it's Bolden the next series, it's LeGarrette Blount another series, and there's really not one guy. And I think they need to just find that guy and say, okay, let him be our featured back.
The bye week is still 2 weeks away, but I think it's time for a self-scout in some of these regards, because they get to situations where I think they do commit to the run, and you'll see 1, 2, 3 in a row, and it becomes kind of predictable. And maybe that's what dissuades them from doing it later. So I think it is. It's finding your flow as a play caller, finding what works for you, going to Tom and say, what do you feel really good about, and then relying upon those things.
I think there were a total of 9 targets at tight ends prior to Gronkowski's return. I've heard people all week, Wiggy, talk about he's been in the game for, 51 plays, 17 times they target him. That's one-third of his snaps. Did they go to him too much?
I don't think so.
I mean, so either.
Because when I watched him play, I thought,
he's open.
He looked good. He looked good as far as, he wasn't, out there panning and couldn't breathe. He looked good. He was able to get open. He made some plays. I think a couple of the balls, him and Tom weren't really on the same page. One ball, he kind of got lost in the sun. Mm-hmm. I think when you look at Gronkowski, he was their best player. And I think Brady got to a certain point in that game where they were down, or they had to now press, and he said, okay, I'm going to the one guy I can rely on.
I think there was a little bit of a crutch scenario here in this game. And I think when your completion percentage on one guy is below 50, I think there is a little bit of over-targeting. Remember, the pick six happened targeting him.
That was a bad throw. That was a bad route, too. He rounded it.
Exactly. And I think we talk about this a lot, about getting friendly at the top of routes. He faded away. Mm-hmm. There was another very near pick six to Calvin Pace. It was another target to Gronk. So I do think there was an over-reliance going on upon there. He's like, I got my new toy back. And he might have been a little too giddy about it. I think now we need to work in everyone again, and that's the best version of this Pats.
All right, guys, I think we asked last week what was life going to be like without Aqib Talib. I think we found out. A little vanilla, a little bland.
It's a weird week. I mean, I think you're playing the Jets with Jeremy Curley, who didn't play the first time, and Jeremy Curley is a small, fast guy, I think, who's given this team troubles in the past, him personally, but guys like T.Y. Hilton, guys like Mike Wallace, we saw the problems that DeSean Jackson gave Talib in the preseason. I don't think this would have necessarily been a game where that was a tremendous matchup for him either, but what I think happened a little bit is they get into a situation where it's almost like with a batter in baseball. There's a certain pitcher you don't hit well, and this guy seems to have their number, and it didn't seem like they adjusted to maybe providing help on that particular guy. They found their guy, and the second part of that to me was the move the pocket stuff. They got more sacks this week, which is a statistical thumbs up, but I thought their pocket integrity was much worse. I think there were too many pocket-breaking plays by him.
All right, guys, 400-plus field goals were kicked in the National Football League, and then on a 56-yarder in overtime, they decide to enforce a new play that a memo was sent out. I thought it is one of the most bogus calls. What do you make of the call at the end of the game?
I thought it was the worst call I have ever seen, and especially in that situation here when
he wasn't second level, he wasn't a jumper,
he wasn't, and the push had no bearing on the play whatsoever. It wasn't
no bearing on the trajectory of the kick.
It had nothing to do with the play. I mean, I don't know why they do it. Maybe
why wouldn't you push a pile? You're trying to block a field. It makes no sense.
Here's the thing.
It's your specialty. What do you got on this?
If you watch that play, and this is a game-deciding play in overtime, Damon Harrison at the right guard spot for the Jets has got his arm hooked around the head of the guy. I'm not advocating that should have been a flag either, but when you're in game-deciding plays, the official's position, I don't care what the rule book says, is a discretionary one. Best example I can give is at the end of the Super Bowl last year.
Yeah, but a rule's a rule, man. Rules heard that all week.
Rules chapter 7, Article 5.
913, 913.
Yeah, I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, but you have discretion for this reason. Had they called the letter of the law safety rule, there's an out route that Michael Crabtree had at the goal line in last year's game that was absolute helmet-to-helmet defenseless receiver.
There was contact at the end of the game.
That game would have ended first and goal with the Niners. Your Super Bowl champion right now would be the 49ers if they did the discretionary call on a safety rule. They don't do that because the game's not about them. This seemed to me very ridiculous. I think probably one of the worst calls I've seen.
And it would take forever with all the rules that they have, all the calls that we don't...
Seven, eight-hour game.
There's so many calls, that rules that people have no idea about, and they never call. What they normally do is say, hey, listen, don't do that again. If you do it again, I'm going to throw the flag.
Every team tries to do the borderline little things to help yourself go ahead.
That piece of paper you got there, if you can't fit the rules of the game on front and back of that side, single space, it shouldn't be in there. We've gotten to be the royal and ancient. We've got 40-page rule book. It's stupid. If the fans don't know it, if the players in the field don't know it, it shouldn't be in there.
I think what he said. All right, we got to talk about a lot of injuries in the National Football League. Plus, Peyton Manning goes back to Indy. How'd that whole thing go? That and more when Patriots This Week continues.
Patriots This Week is brought to you by Putnam, celebrating 75 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Bose, the official sound of the New England Patriots. And by Ace Ticket, the official fan travel partner of the Patriots. For information, call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
This week's Putnam Player Spotlight is Chandler Jones. The 6'5", 265-pound defensive end had an impressive effort in leading the defense against the Jets. The Syracuse grad was in on 11 tackles, sacked Geno Smith twice, and forced a fumble. And the sack dance of the personable Jones even caught the attention of the man who inspired it, Pee Wee Herman. This week's Player Spotlight is brought to you by Putnam Investments, pursuing performance excellence for 75 years.
Welcome back to Patriots This Week here inside the Bob's Discount Furniture Studios. And we're lucky enough to sit here, guys, on these nice cushy chairs. There's a lot of guys that aren't playing football anymore. Guys like Reggie Wayne, Jay Cutler, Sam Bradford, ACL. Cutler, I think, had to groin. He's got some other issues. Nick Foles gets knocked out of a game. We've seen multiple concussions. Why are these injuries happening? I got a theory. Go ahead. Matt, we start with you first.
I just think it's just that's just the way it is. It's just the nature of the beast. Some guys get
bigger, faster, stronger. Then.
Well, no, it has nothing to do with bigger, faster, stronger. I was a guy that I played a lot of years, and I never got hurt. I was fortunate.
You and I aren't that athletic. I mean, no offense.
Well, I mean, I wasn't the greatest athlete, but I played in a lot of games, and I was out there, and I was just lucky. There were hits that I was able to take or guys falling on my legs that I was able to get up from. There were other guys that, you know, one play and they blew their Achilles out, not doing basically anything. It's just the nature of the beast.
The knee-jerk reaction to this is, well, how can we make it even safer? I mean, what can we do? Can we find a rule to protect people? Could we fill the field with those little plastic balls, the McDonald's jump-in thing? I mean, like, how can we pad this game even more? And I think that's a ridiculous reaction. But when you say this, though, other people are thinking the same thing. We're losing a lot of key players here. These are the headliners.
Hey,
how do we make
18,
it safer?
18-game regular season, shortened to preseason.
That'll help.
Hey, you guys have been at camp, too. Camp's a joke anymore. I mean, helmets and shells. We'd play 20 years if it was helmets and shells. I think part of that, too, is to get your body kind of ready for the conditioning and the rigors of a 16-game regular season. All right, guys, we got to talk about Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning goes back to Indianapolis. It was the game of the night on Sunday Night Football. One of the greatest owners in the world, Jim Irsay, because he never shuts up. He doesn't put Twitter down. Criticizes Manning prior to the return. Smart move by him, because I thought Peyton was going to lay one on him.
I thought it was a dumb move. I mean, look at what this guy did for your franchise.
The city?
And didn't they have, Peyton, didn't they have like an appreciation night for him that night too?
Because, in a video?
Because I saw,
like one of those Celtic things.
I saw Marvin Harrison there, Edgerrin James. I mean, how are you going to rip this guy and then have an appreciation night for him when he comes to town? I just think everything he did, not only for that organization, but that city, just that state, I don't think you can knock a guy like that, especially for what he did for your organization.
You could have had Ryan Leaf.
Yeah.
And I think that's the important things in that draft. And you should have a point of perspective here. You got the building out of it. Mm-hmm. I think you also look at the situation. You say, hey, we came out pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not like we got screwed in this deal. I mean, Peyton goes another place. God bless him. Best of luck. We got Andrew Luck. And we've got our future for the next 20 years. It feels to me like a spurned ex.
I really don't think you can find a classier guy in the league than me.
And when he retires, he's going to retire as a Colt.
All right, good stuff, guys. Got to touch on the team we got coming up next, and that's the Miami Dolphins. That and more when Patriots This Week continue. All right, the number one free agent receiver, obviously, I think in the whole free agent class was Mike Wallace. Miami signed him to a big contract. They have other weapons. Let's take a look at Brian Hartline and what he does. He's at the top of your screen right there. What I want you to do is watch his safety, and Ryan Tannehill does a good job. You got a slot receiver right here. Obviously, you got speed on the outside Wallace. Safety sits, which gives a big opening downfield. Nice ball right there by Tannehill. Right here, good blitz look right here. A lot of people stepping up. So what do? They back two guys into the backfield for protection purposes. Okay, here we go. Advance it. Tannehill's starting to feel the pressure. Watch him get out the pocket right here. Tannehill keeps the play alive for Hartline. Hartline does a good job stepping out of tackles. He runs really, really precise routes. Here we go down here at the bottom of the screen. All out blitz look right here by the Indianapolis Colts. And this was a big win for Miami early in the season on the road to get him to 3-0. Nice job getting up the slot right there. When it's crunch time, third down I'm talking about. Third and four, third and seven. Brian Hartline is the guy that Ryan Tannehill will look for. He's the guy with the best hands on the Miami Dolphins team. That's the guy he's going to. There's your Zoe Show.
The Zoe Show is brought to you by Pepsi, the official soft drink of the New England Patriots.
Welcome back to Patriots This Week here inside the Bob's Discount Furniture Studios. And the Miami Dolphins with their new uniforms, guys. What do you think of the new helmet?
I don't like it.
World League.
I mean,
any given Sunday.
Skinny dolphin isn't tough to begin with, yet I thought Jimmy Johnson made it an angry dolphin. I kind of dig the colors. I think it's one of the prettier
South Beach dolphin.
Yeah, skinny dolphin. It's pretty. It's on Ryan Tannehill, guess what? He is the sixth highest selling jersey in the National Football League, and he's also sacked 26 times. They're not protecting this guy. They're coming off a bye. They're playing the Buffalo Bills, who, by the way, it's not EJ Manuel, it's Thad Lewis, the quarterback. 2-0 now in his two starts, but they lose to Buffalo at home. What do you make of that weekend? What do you make of where this team is and where they were 3 weeks in when they were 3-0?
And what I say 3 weeks in when they were 3-0?
Call me in 3 weeks.
Yeah, I said, wait a little bit. This is still the Miami Dolphins here. And I think when you look at it, like you said, they have been able to protect their quarterback. They obviously made a trade to get Brian McKinney down there and maybe to help a little bit. I think you look at their talent, they have some weapons on the outside. We know who those guys are. But I just think it's still the Miami Dolphins. This is Philbin's second year as the head coach, and you know, we got to see how they buy into a system a little bit. But at the end of the day, they're still the Miami Dolphins, and I actually think that they're going backwards a little bit, and so I feel good about this game with the Patriots.
How silly was it that they paid $50 million for Mike Wallace in the offseason?
My argument this offseason,
it's not like you have Andrew Luck, is what I'm saying.
I think he needed weapons. I think it was good to invest there. I don't know necessarily at that dollar figure, but I think the biggest error was letting Jake Long go. I mean, I think a lot of the issues they've had have been up front. I mean, you have to build that way first. And to me, it was the perception that they went out there and spent. I think it was actually a net loss, in my view. Yes, you go get Wallace, but they let Reggie Bush go, and they let their left tackle go. And a lot of the problems they've had have been not being explosive. Anthony Fasano's gone at the tight end position. They let some little pieces that were important to him go.
Hartline can make some plays.
Yeah.
I mean, Hartline, I think, is going to end up being this guy's go-to receiver, talking about Ryan Tannehill. But can they protect him well enough? But you face this Patriots defense. They sign Andre Carter this week. Do you turn a guy like Andre Carter loose?
I think you have to turn that whole front line loose because, you know, like you've talked about, Tannehill's been sacked, 26 times?
Kick Chandler down inside, right?
And whatever you want to call that whole zebra package or whatever is where you put a bunch of, you know, fast guys on your defensive line and you say get after the quarterback. And I think you have to do that because when you look at the one area that's kind of affected the Patriots in the passing game, it's been those deep throws down the football field, and you got a guy like Hotline who's not a bad player getting down the field, but then they paid Mike Wallace $50 million for a reason. He's a guy that can get past your secondary, so I think you have to let those guys up front go, get after Tannehill, make him make some bad decisions.
Right. Matt, you've been here on teams where you've gone down to Miami, or Miami has come here, and because it's a divisional game,
sure,
they really play you well.
Yeah.
You look at this defense, Cameron Wake has given this offense problems over the years, and fair to say you got to figure out what that guy is? Or where he is on the field at all times?
He's always someone you got to keep an eye on. I think LRB being a new figure there is a guy who's sort of a tackle machine. They've got some other good pieces. I think they're really big and athletic across the front. They've drafted pretty well. I think that front group, if you want to extend it to seven, is pretty solid for these guys. The one thing your Wake point, I think, is more relevant now because the offensive line has been having some struggles, not in overall protection, but in one-on-one matchups.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big deal. I mean, it's not scheme. It's not, you know, blitz pickup, which I think was actually more of an issue in the Saints game than last week. It's more guys just intermittently losing a one-on-one battle. And Wake's one of the better one-on-one players in the league, so it's something to keep an eye on.
All right, guys, good stuff. Coming up next, we get to our picks and our game changer when Patriots This Week continues.
Patriots This Week is brought to you by Putnam, celebrating 75 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Bose, the official sound of the New England Patriots. And by Ace Ticket, the official fan travel partner of the Patriots. For information, call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
Ryan Lowe with the latest edition of the Fantasy Lowdown. I like Marcus Colston a lot this week, with the Saints coming off a bye, hosting Buffalo, and Jimmy Graham's status uncertain. This will be the breakout game for Colston, whose season has been a disappointment thus far. You'll want to sit Greg Jennings. He's up against his old mates in the Packers, and they'll shut him down. My sleeper for Week 8 is Kendall Hunter of the Niners. Even backup backs produce against the Jaguars.
The Fantasy Lowdown is brought to you by Verizon. Stay connected to your Patriots at home and on the go with Fios Quantum Internet and NFL Mobile from Verizon. That's powerful.
Welcome back to Patriots This Week. Time now for our predictions and our game changer. That one player that will go above and beyond, exceed expectations this week. Start with Matt Chatham.
We've been cheating all year, Twiggy, so I'm going to continue to cheat. I'm going to go two-headed. We know that there was a bit of a crutch situation with Gronk last week. Two other guys got to step up. It's going to be two receivers, so I'm going to keep my eye on Kimbrell. I'm going to keep my eye on actually Austin Colley. I don't want to see the vet get more involved, but there needs to be other targets. My score is 26-20 Patriots in a close game.
Ooh, nice, Wiggy.
Ooh, you know what? I think this is going to be a blowout. I like the Patriots 34-17, and my game changer is none other than Rob Gronkowski. Week 2, I think he gets his leg back under him. Brady loves to go to him. I think he has a big week.
Excellent job picking Buzz Lightyear right there. See that big thing he's got on?
Yeah, yeah.
Space
yeah.
Ranger. Guess who I'm picking? That's right, I'm picking the Patriots. 31-14 over the Miami Dolphins. My game changer is going to be Stephen Ridley because you got to get the run going. You got to get back to what you did well. Go back to that Atlanta game. Pop that tape up. Do what you did against the Falcons and get back on track. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Patriots This Week. For Matt Chatham, for Jermaine Wiggins, I'm Scott Zolak. Thanks for watching. See you next time on Patriots This Week.